Hi there. My name is Albert Dabba. Welcome to the show Extra Innings, covering all the bases. I am the host of Extra Innings, and I am a life coach, a therapist, and a filmmaker. On Extra Innings, we talk about many different subjects. We talk about wellness, mental health, depression, anxiety, suicide, and how people deal with their problems at hand, how they cope with grief, and how they hopefully get through it. On Extra Innings, we've had many different people on the show so far from all different phases of life. We've had therapists, life coaches, artists, policemen, entrepreneurs, and many others. Tonight, we have on our show Leah Johnston Robotham, and she is a nurse practitioner in behavioral health. And we will speak to her in a minute. I just like to first say that Extra Innings comes from a film that I made called Extra Innings, which is now on Amazon Prime. So when you have some time, check it out. So Leah, we had a chance to talk the other day, and I found our conversation very stimulating. So welcome to the show tonight. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here and have this chance, this opportunity. And I'm fine. Thank you. You said that you were hoping that I'd give a little bit of what I've done and what I do. Well, here's one of the problems, Albert. I'm getting dangerously close to old. At 75, I think that I have to limit some of my history. I believe it or not, I started out as a pediatric nurse, and I've gone from everything as a sniffles nurse taking care of the sick children in daycare to very heavy duty nursing in the psychiatric units in a very, very large city hospital. And then I ended up moving, doing, you know, private therapy, doing groups, and groups has been my love, and teaching at Seton Hall University. I am right now on leave. And the work I'm doing right now is all volunteer, and it's running groups for seniors. So how did I end up running groups for seniors? Because all of a sudden I realized that from the time I was very young, there were always groups of people that I could share with what I was going through at that particular time. Teenagers with other teenagers. Of course, I had adults that I could do other things and deal with. And when I was raising children, I was really fortunate. I had the other parents that were sitting in those tiny little desks during back to school nights, and waiting along little league lines and waiting outside of music class or things like that. I had a grandmother who would, you know, could, you know, shell peas or read the evening paper, you know, out on the stoop, out on the porch, and talk to everybody that went by. And so I ended up calling a group that I founded, and I call it the Stoop Group, because I found that a lot of women today that are older did not have a place to share this phase of their life with other people. We also felt that it had to be private. And being a group therapist myself, and this is not a therapy group, we don't call it group therapy. Of course, it's therapeutic for all of us, but we don't call it group therapy. And we get to talk about what's going on. It might be something about an election. It might be something about cooking meals for one, but mostly it ends up about loss and how we deal with that. What do we do with loss? How do we deal with isolation? How do we deal with not being as mobile as we were maybe even a year ago? We deal with what's it like when you've had to leave your neighborhood that you've lived in for, you know, 40 years. What's it like to lose a partner? What's it like even to lose a pet that's kind of been there to keep you company? Your grown children move far away. And that's been very difficult for some people now during the pandemic because they couldn't even fly to see them. And that's been heartbreaking for some people. But amazingly, this group, thanks to Lifelong Montclair and people like Michelle DeWitt and Montclair in the senior programs, has been able to help people figure out how to use the computers if they weren't already using them and get on Zoom. And we have literally at 3:30 every Wednesday afternoon still run Stoop.
Wow.
So
great.
our ladies have still been there and they still come to group. And with that kind of isolation, I think that this kind of programming has been really important. They still had a place to meet.
Well, that's wonderful. So it's all done. It's all done on Zoom right now during this time. Yep. And they're all, it's only women. It's not, it's just women.
That particular group is just women. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think we need somebody to start a men's group too. Mm-hmm. Because there's some things men are not going to talk about with a group of women in the room and vice versa.
You know, it's interesting because I find that, I was talking to my girlfriend about it, who actually also lives in Montclair. And we were talking about the fact that, about friends. And it seems that, and well, I know in my case, I have some really good friends, but I don't have, like, she has so many different friends. And she said to me, she has found with her men in the past that she's been with that it's similar, that women seem to have more, I don't know if that's overall, but that they usually have more friends than men have friends. And that's why I mentioned, is this only for women? Because I think, and I'm not sure why. I mean, men don't, I talk to some good friends on a regular basis, but it's not a whole group. Now and then I'll talk to other ones, but maybe men just don't open up as much or don't have that opportunity or don't take the opportunity. I'm not sure.
I think it's changing, though. I think the generation that we raised is very, very different than our generation. Mm-hmm. But I know that most of my brothers were raised as, you know, you don't talk about it. There's no such thing as, opening up to somebody else about what's bothering you. You know, you have to be strong. You have to be, strong-willed, quiet about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, especially I was raised in an Irish Catholic family. Somebody told me once that in the Irish language, there was no word for depression.
Really? Wow.
I don't know if since then there's been one, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you think about it.
It is. It's really interesting. I mean, so many things. Like I'm part of this group that I've been in and out of a group that people have lost their loved ones to suicide. And I was in one of the groups last week. And I actually was amazed to see that I think it's been maybe a few months that I hadn't been there, but none of the people that I had known from before are there now, but it's a whole new group of people. And it's a big mixture of men and women who, have recently or more recently have lost their loved ones, whether it was a husband, a wife, a daughter, a son to suicide. And, it's one of the things that I've talked about on the show, and it's one of the things that I deal with in the film that I made. You mentioned when we spoke the other day, something you called the silent suicide, I think?
I can't own that term. I'm not sure who started to use it.
Right.
I kind of have adapted it to what I see happening sometimes with seniors. That it's almost a misdiagnosed situation. Somebody comes in and they died of malnutrition, or they died of a heart attack, they died of a stroke, they died of this and that. And one of the things that we have found is that, people can kill themselves in very different ways. It can be a passive, slow, it can be very different. If I live by myself, I may stop eating. I may stop drinking and dehydrate. I might not take care of my diabetes the way I'm supposed to. I might stop going out for walks. I might not eat the food that I'm supposed to eat. I might stop taking my cardiac medication. I might not go to physical therapy anymore. I might not eat the Meals on Wheels that comes into the house. I might stop taking all the phone calls, or when I get the phone calls, oh, everything's fine. I'm okay. Oh, don't worry, dear. You don't have to come down today. No, I'm okay. Yeah, it's all right. So there's a lot of hiding, and that can kill you.
Yeah.
Like isolation and that not taking care of yourself is very easily hidden, very easily.
Well, I remember we were discussing last week, one of the things you mentioned is that when you ask someone, who do you love and what do you like to do, that gives you a sense of where they're at, especially if they don't have a response to that. that they, there's no one that they love, and they don't, there's nothing that they really like to do. Obviously they're pretty lost. I would think they're on that verge of, what am I living for? I would think, and feeling really isolated and alone.
Yeah, I mean, I whenever I did psych evaluations, especially, you know, in the community, and, you know, I could do the long, you know, the senior depression scales, the senior suicide scales. I could do all of those. But what usually just hit me right in the gut was when I said, who do you love? If somebody has to hesitate with that answer, wow, that's a really hard thing to not hear an answer for that. Or what do you like? And somebody can't tell you anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty sad. And so let's say we do get them into a group. We can't make that all better. We can't find them their partner and bring them back to them. But we can at least find other people who have been going through the same kind of feelings and have found some ways to make it a little bit lighter. Maybe make the hurt not as hurtful.
Yeah.
And know that it's not going to all go away, but it can be livable.
So in your when you were working before, and now you were on leave, you said you volunteer. Working in psychiatry or working as a nurse, how does it differ from let's say someone who's seeing a therapist within, let's say, with these, the people that you work with, were they in the hospital when you were working with them?
I worked in several different places. I had private clients that I did for years, and I mostly did groups in my private work because I just like groups. And thank God some people do still do group therapy. It's really important. There's not always enough therapists to go around. And sometimes it's easier to see it when other people are experiencing some of what I'm experiencing. It's never quite the same. Everybody experiences something differently, but at least maybe other people are going through some of it. So I did a lot of that, and I loved it, and I'm still working with groups. I also worked a lot with students in psychiatric hospitals right up in Montclair, I mean, in Cedar Grove at the Essex County Hospital. And it's a great way to get students to be comfortable and to first see how you connect with another person, not first see what their diagnosis is. No, this is not, you know, a schizophrenic. This is Tom Jones, and Tom's got a family, and he was a beautiful baby born to somebody, and he was loved and cherished and, you know, played as a toddler, and he's got parents that loved him, and this is a person. And once we can teach people to see someone else as a person first, then they can start to deal with the diagnosis and decide, you know, so how are we going to treat this? How can we help them feel better? And I think that's probably the most important thing. Get the connectedness. How are we connected rather than how are we different?
Right. No, I got it. Okay. Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll get back with Leah in just about a minute. So stay tuned, and thank you.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m. So tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hi, we're back with Leah, and we were talking about being connected. And I think that, you know, goes for any age group of where you're at in your life, whether you're, you know, a teenager, which I think can be a really difficult time, going off to college or not going to college or figuring out what you want to do in life. Working your way through a job and maybe feeling you don't have the right job and not connecting maybe with the people you're with, being whether you have a partner in your life, you get married, you don't get married, whether you're living with someone or not, and how it feels without being with someone. And then as we get older, as we talk about seniors, if you lose the person that you've been with for years or lose, like you even said, a pet, what it feels like. So you mentioned with the seniors calling it a silent suicide. And I was mentioning this to my friend the other day and saying there's a really high rate of suicide in seniors. But I think one of the things that you mentioned that is so important is having groups that connect any of these age groups, because it gives the opportunity to feel, and let me know what you think about it, that they're not alone with whatever feelings that they have, because sometimes we can get so deep in these feelings and, you know, our mind can tell us all kinds of stories, which could be real for us, but we're also seeing it just from one point of view. So tell me what you think about that. Is that what you see?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think if you think about it, how many times as a friend or somebody that's not even a friend said something and you said, oh my God, I was just thinking that the other day. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And if you're all by yourself and you're not talking to anybody else that's in the same situation or has the same perspective on something, you don't know that what you're thinking isn't, you know, so far-fetched. So, yeah, it's that connection, just like you just said. It's what we all need. And also to know that our perception of things can be very different. I just read an article recently. I'm so sorry. Now I don't know who to give it, you know, give credit to. And it was saying that, you know, seniors had an easier time in many ways through the pandemic than younger people. Seniors had been through other hard times and had developed some coping skills through that, that younger people had not. We knew some ways to do with less food in the refrigerator or eating things that maybe they weren't our favorite thing or using less of some things or not having all of our loved ones around us all the time. a lot of people had to learn that. Younger people did not have people off at war as often. Of course, now, you know, who knows what's happening in our world. We've had a very, very rough time the last year or so, the last couple of years. But in many ways, seniors had built up some of that resilience. That doesn't take away from the loneliness or isolation, but we do have more resilience in some ways than the younger ones. And that's why many of the seniors have said how worried they are about their grandchildren, because they've been taken away from, you know, the socialization process that they learn in school.
Right,
they're not with kids their own age. Hopefully a lot of them got to play at least some sports, you know, to be with other kids. But that's been a very traumatic experience for children being home by themselves.
Yeah, so, no, yeah. I know that sports was my savior in life. Being able to play sports, be a spectator, but I was a player. I always played sports, all kinds of sports. And, you know, I felt the physical activity, but the socialness was just wonderful. You know, like when you play on a team, I've always said, like, for me, baseball was my main sport, and being part of a team gives you a sense of sportsmanship and camaraderie. And you can be very competitive or not as competitive, but there is competition that you're playing. And if it's, you know, if it's in done in a way where you have a good coach who helps you deal with the ups and downs of winning and losing, because that is just really important, because you're always going to, I mean, in every sport, there's going to be a loss, and learning how to deal with loss in that way, I think helps you learn how to, you know, deal with loss in many other ways. Losing a companion in life, I know is very difficult from my own experience, from reading other people's experiences and having different guests on the show who have lost their children to suicide, and written books about it and gone through the healing process of grieving. It's very difficult. So I think that groups can be exceptionally helpful. I joined a writing group. You mentioned, I'd like to get into talk about your writing group. I was lucky enough to take some writing groups with this woman, Nancy Arony, who was on the show. I think one of my first guests on the show. And I met her through this place, Kripalu, which is up in Lenox, Massachusetts. It's a yoga meditation place, and they have all kinds of different outlets there for wellness. And she leads this writing group where she calls it Jumpstart Your Memoir Writing from the Heart. And it's about writing anything and not just your memoir. But the main thing in that is writing from your heart. And people also give a little phrase like, at dinner time, and then you'll write on your own for 15, 20 minutes. Each person has a chance to read it. Everyone has a chance to respond to after someone reads it. But there's a rule in the group that you can't say anything. It's not about saying anything critical about what someone writes. It's just about expression and talking about what they like and what they heard. And then when the next person goes, and the group would be every day for 5 days, like about maybe six hours a day, 7 hours a day, with breaks in between, or 8 hours. And at the end of the week, it was a 5 day workshop. You felt like amazing. You felt like you knew all these people really well. And we saw some people who in the beginning of the week, who never even wrote before, who really opened up. So I find writing as a great way of expression.
I do too. And I also think I've often said that I'm into writing groups, and I've been fortunate for that. A dear, dear poet that so many of us love, and she's going to be honored forever, Laura Boss, if you ever get a chance to read some of her work. And I just honored her as one of the best teachers I've ever met. She recognized a special voice in everybody she ever taught or worked with. And I remember that there was no one ever criticized by her. She found something in every single thing that someone wrote in her class that said something very special.
What's her last name? Excuse me? Her last
name? Barra Boss, B-O-S-S.
Okay.
She's a brilliant poet. And we're all going to miss her. And I think the world is missing somebody very special with someone who said something to all of us that everybody can hear. And I remember her saying one day that writing can be a compression of what goes on in life. And that's what it is. And we all laugh because I always say when I start the writing group that I now work with, that you really have to do some real privacy kind of stuff and really kind of keep what's in the writing group in the writing group. Because think about it, Albert, what comes out in writing groups, especially in poetry groups, your own family doesn't know some of that stuff. So you really get to know each other probably better than anybody else knows, you know, you or, you know, themselves. So it's a real washout for you. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful way to express yourself. And when things are outside, it gives you more perspective on them. It's easier to look at them and to decide, maybe that's not so important anymore. Maybe I don't have to keep that baggage on the inside and I have more room for other things. When you write it down, you have time to look at it and time to move forward with other things. And that's important when you're older. You don't want to waste your time on everything that you've built up.
Yeah. You know, you just said something that made me think of a client that I had. Real quickly, I'll tell you. I had a client that I work with who had a huge loss in his life. And a year before that, I met with him. I met him virtually. And he told me when he first called me that he needed someone to vent to that he didn't know. And because if he would tell someone he knew, they would start, you know, saying, well, you know, you had this, you had that, or whatever they would say. But he wanted a stranger, someone who was, you know, I've worked as a therapist and a life coach and still do. And I found it really interesting. And that's what he used the time for, to really vent. And we met for about 8 sessions. And it was wonderful to see how he, in that short time, he grew to the point. He reached out to me the other day and said, can you write me something? I really need a support dog. And because he had dogs and he didn't have them anymore. He lost them. And it was very sweet. And I was really glad to do that. So we'll be right back. We have another commercial coming up. And we'll be back with Leah in just a minute. And thank you.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Leah. Leah, so tell me a little bit about your writing groups. What are they like? And is there a certain age group in the constitution of the group?
Well, the ones that I'm in myself, there's not. It's a mixed age group, which has been really fun. But the one that I facilitate is for seniors. And it's out of the senior activities program in Montclair right now. Although, you know, we're not all from Montclair. I mean, people are from all over and come, and especially now that it's virtual. So, you know, we've had people from other states, not just from, you know, other towns. But we do the same way you just explained it. I give prompts. People write for like 20 minutes and then we share. And you're absolutely right. There is no critical critique. Cannot be. Why would somebody come back if people are just going to criticize what they say? So there's a lot of encouragement, but not false encouragement. I mean, no one says that's the best thing I ever heard in my life. I mean, people are going to know that's false. I mean, we say things like we pick out a line that was an exceptional use of words. When I asked people to come write with me, I had said you only need to bring a sense of adventure. You have to have a real love of everyday words, and you have to be willing to compress, you know, whole thoughts into fewer words. And they came and they wrote, and we actually ended up making an anthology. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And the last one we did that we made up, we called Pandemology, because we wrote it during the pandemic. And I printed them all out and everybody loved having copies of it. And I should send you one of the copies. It was just wonderful. People were thrilled to have it.
So these are writings of everyone in the group that you put compressed.
Yeah, everybody picked the writings they wanted to put in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the first one, they did artwork that they had done or photographs they had taken during that time. So it was a nice compilation of people's work. And I think they were very proud of it. I know I was. I felt really proud
of it. That's great. That's great. When I wrote the film Extra Innings, I wrote it over, believe it or not, 20 years. It was not something I, you know, sat and wrote every day. But I'll never forget what happened. I was, I have a video production business called Simba Productions, which produced the film Extra Innings. And I was doing a shoot following it was a health seminar. And I met a guy there who we connected. We talked a lot. And he said, I'd love to come see your place. And he came to my place and I showed him all around. And at that point, I was pretty busy in my business and I had a large studio. And I showed him everything. And he goes to me, he says, you don't seem very happy with what you're doing. And I go, oh, where'd you get that from? But he was right. Because what I really wanted to do was write my film. So I spoke to him about the film. And he mentioned the book. You may have heard of it or read it, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. Have you ever?
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So I got the book and actually took a seminar with her at this place, Kripalu, that was up in Lenox. And I started journalizing every day. And that really led me to start working on the script. And it was just about every day that I would write something, whatever came to my mind. And I never would even read what I wrote. I would just write. And I found that if I was angry about something, it was really great to just write. Even if I just felt, I don't know what I'm going to, I just wrote whatever came to my mind. And I felt that, and taking these workshops later, actually, I finished the screenplay before I took those workshops. But I found the whole connection to writing, to getting out my feelings and thoughts and putting it in a story, because it was based on a true story, so I knew what I was writing about, and I was able to consolidate it. And I'll never forget the feeling I had when I felt I wrote 12 drafts, and I shared it with many people. And one professor told me, who I met from another friend, and she said to me, I met her for lunch, and she hadn't read what I had written, but she said, if you get a lot of people saying the same thing about one section or one scene, take a look at it, because everyone's going to have their own opinion. And obviously, this was a different kind of, you know, this was working on a script that I wanted to make a film. And it was great to show it to friends, people in the business, people not in the business. And finally, when I finished it, I'll never forget, I was on the beach, I was using my iPad at the time, and I wrote the end, and this was the last draft of the end. I literally, because I had done a lot, quite a bit of acting in theater, and I wrote the end, and I literally in my head saw all the actors in the script take a bow. And it was such a beautiful feeling I had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? I mean, I've actually read some of my writing later on, and it wasn't that good, but I still felt good about having written it. You know, it might have been something that I didn't do anything else with, mm-hmm. but after I had written it, it was a good feeling to get rid of it, you know, and then there's some stuff I want to keep forever. And that's okay.
Yeah, I think writing is such a good, healthy thing to do. So that's why I see that, like when you say, like perhaps seniors to be able to sit and write, it seems like a great way for people to connect and talk about their writing, because I think a lot of feelings come out when you're writing.
I would love the opportunity to be running more writing groups. I really would. So we have to see what we can do about that. But you know what? There is one thing, though, that I forgot it before. And the statistics say that 58% of older people who actually do commit suicide, within that month, they have seen a doctor or somebody in their church or temple or mosque or whatever. Hmm. And not said a thing about it.
In other words, what do you mean they did not mention where
they had a visit with them or talked with them, said nothing. Nothing about how they were feeling or what they had an intention to do.
Oh, really?
They might not even knew they had an intention to do that at the time. Just like a lot of times when you stop taking your meds or stop eating, you just don't want to eat. You just don't want to take those meds. You're not necessarily thinking of, I'm going to kill myself. We have to remember that. It's not always this intention to. I think we have to remember that.
One of the things I had on Dr. Dan Reidenberg from the organization SAVE, which their goal is to reduce the stigma of mental illness and reduce the amount of suicide in the world. And as he said on this program, and I got to meet him many, many times because he was a fiscal partner on our film. And he said to me that, we cannot end suicide, but we can reduce the amount of suicide by education. And I felt like that whole stigma is so strong for people to talk about their deepest feelings of feeling of the idea of being alone and what they're thinking about, if they're thinking of taking their lives. And I think that's why it's so important to keep in touch. But that's an interesting statistic that you just said.
I'll tell you who that's from, too. I think that's a Marilyn Mendoza. She's a clinical psych instructor at Tulane University. And she said it's important that we remember that. And in that same article, the other thing that was mentioned, and so many people are saying it over and over again, and you talked about it when we were talking the other day, is that when a child, even later into their adulthood, much, much later, if one of their parents kills themselves, they are much more likely to commit suicide themselves. And we need to somehow or other do more education. And I think it's part of our job as seniors to educate the next generation that people don't kill themselves as a personal, you know, vendetta against our children. And because children feel, I wasn't enough for you, that's why you killed yourself. Spouses feel, you killed yourself because I wasn't enough. But children more so than anybody, even when they're adults, feel that a parent left them that way because they weren't enough. And we have to get rid of, you know, that kind of thinking if we can, just by education. Or we'll have more suicides at a later age.
Yeah, I really think education is the key to really be able to get people to talk about what it is they're feeling, and to let them, and groups are so important if you can get someone in a group, and to really get it out there that it's okay to feel the way you feel. We had on Kate Taylor last week, James Taylor's sister, and she talked about how when she went to see a therapist, how she was angry. And the therapist said, you know, you're really angry. And she said, yeah, I am. And she goes, and he said, well, you have every right to be angry. And I said, he validated the fact that you had a feeling that you were having. And sometimes you need that extra help to tell you that it's okay to feel what you're feeling for whatever reason why you're feeling it, and then talk about it. And many people are afraid to really talk about their real feelings.
Yeah, because once you say it out loud, then it's open to judgment by others.
Yeah.
And if you're not confident in yourself, that's just going to knock you down even more because you're afraid of that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think
it takes great courage. It takes courage to put something right out there.
Yeah. I want to tell you when we come back from a break about one of the people we had on the show who talks about telling the people that he worked with what he was going through and what he was told. He was told by his boss not to do it, but he did. And it really changed his life. So we'll be right back with Leah after this break. Thank you, Leah.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Leah. We left off where I was talking about, we were talking about being able to tell people how you feel, whether it's a therapist or people that you're working with. So we had a wonderful guy on the show about a month ago or so, and he wrote a book called I'm looking at the book right now, called Overcoming the Darkness. He sent me a copy. And his name was Eric Weaver. He was a sergeant in the police force. And he tried to take his life several times. And by doing so, he had to be out from work. And he told his captain that he was having back problems. And finally, he tried to take his life, I think something like three times. And he finally went back to his captain and said the truth, that he tried to commit suicide. But not only that, he told him, and he said, I want to tell the people that I work with that's why I've been out. And the captain said, you can't do that. And he said, well, why? Because what will they think? And his response was, as I remember his response, it was, that's exactly what the problem is. We worry about what people will think. And I think it's important to let them know. And he had a group together and he told them. And he said, some people walked out, but most of the people that were there, who were his people in the police force, other policemen, came up to him afterwards and talked to him about how they had similar feelings. Because in the police force, suicide is very prominent. And that's something I had never known, but it was a quite compelling story. And now he's retired from the police force, and he does go out and talk to groups and people, including people in the police force, about about his own experiences and about how this is a very prominent feeling that many people have. And he's written this book, and he really spends his time teaching people about what it feels like, what it was like for him, and how to go through it. So I think he's an amazing guy for what he has done.
Very courageous person.
Yeah, I think to be able to come out and some of the stories that he told me, and I'm looking forward to reading his book. So, sometimes we don't realize what, the jobs that people have, how they can really take a toll on us, and not only on us, on our family. So it's really important to, again, have that education to know that if you have something, and that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, was to get that message out and to meet with people like yourself to talk about some of these problems that people have and how important it is to find that place for yourself to be able to discuss whatever's going on with you. And in whatever way it is, whether it's through writing or going with a therapist or any artistic way to get your feelings out.
And I think you're right. And one of the things that we do in Stoop is we talk about sometimes just remembering to send a short note by regular mail, a note to a grandchild, a note to a friend. It can say maybe just thinking of you today. I love you today. We're not doing those simple connections as much. We do so much texting and so much email that we forget what that feeling is like to get something dropped in a mailbox. But that's a sense of connection. And seniors, we need to keep doing that. Seniors leave a legacy of how to connect. And we leave a legacy of how to be kind. And we have to say all those things out loud or in writing. And then I think the senior group of poets, they need to leave back a legacy. So I'm just hoping that our meeting together in groups, that we keep supporting each other in doing that, that they know that we have something to give. It's important that we give. And we have to make sure that they're doing that.
Yeah, no, I think having that anthology is a wonderful thing to have for people.
I have a picture of one. Let me show you. I don't know if it'll show. This is their last one. This is the last one I did.
Anthology,
Isn't that beautiful?
That's very cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice and thick, too. So they've done two of those. And that's really important. So I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, because I think it gives them, you know, you have a book that's something to remember by and something to keep.
It's like it's a legacy. It's a piece of legacy to pass down.
It's like having pictures of your family, except these are writings and feelings and thoughts.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm so proud that they were able to put that out there, put all those feelings and thoughts and everything down, and they did it.
Yeah, it is something. I remember, you know, I keep thinking of when you talk about it and Stoop Talk. I think is that what you refer to?
It's just called Stoop Time.
Yeah. Stoop Time. It keeps coming in my head because I was lucky enough to live in this corner house in this neighborhood, and there was always people walking by. And even if I didn't talk to them, there was an acknowledgement, like, you know, a not hi, yes. How are you doing?
Yes.
Something like that, where I maybe didn't really know the person, but I recognized the person, even if I didn't know their name. Some I did, some I didn't. Or sometimes someone say, great catch, you know, and here I am catching a bowl of soup. And, you know, and I smile at myself or I say thank you, you know, and it was it was really a great time for me. And I'm glad I have this shot in the film of the kid playing ball off the stoop, because that was something I really wanted to have in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it's a connection. It's a time to be with one another. And we might want to look, if we're worried about somebody that's going into depression, it's not always the signs we think. What we have to look for are changes, and that's important. It might not be somebody who's losing weight. It can be somebody who's gained a lot of weight. So it's changes. It's a change in appetite. It might not be somebody who's never sleeping. It might be they're sleeping all the time. It might be somebody who is no longer interested in sex at all, or it might be somebody who is really become, you know, they just always do not have enough sex. That's also a sign of depression, especially in teenagers. And in the elderly, we will see the isolation. We will see a lot of should've, would've, could've's. You will hear an elderly senior person saying, if they're really depressed, I should have gone to my granddaughter's christening. I should have done something different for my daughter when I was raising her. If I could go back, I would have done this. So there's a lot of that blame behavior and a lot of that carrying that around with them. And that just keeps deepening the depression.
Yeah. Okay.
So those are the kind of things we have to look for, too. It's not all the things we used to see in the books. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I think what you're talking about is very real. I think that's a, you know, it's a, I mean, I should have, I could have. I think I used to say a lot of that at one point. And I'm thinking now that, you know, I know I'm in a better place now than I have been before. But I've worked hard to be there. And I think for me, for instance, making the film, it wasn't just cathartic. You know, some people said that it was a closure for you. And I said, no, it wasn't closure for me. It was really an expression for me. And it was a gift that I think that I gave to myself to honor my brother and sister and let the world know about them, because my brother, people didn't really know much about him, and the gifts that I got from him and the gifts that I got from my sister. So I believe for me that I could have and all that stuff, that doesn't mean that I come up here and there now and then. I should have done that. I could have, you know, but on maybe some small things. But overall, I've come to peace with what happened in my own family and want to pass on how to get through it with other people. So we're actually coming to the end of our show. So I am so happy to have talked to you today. It was really enlightening. I felt like we just did our own stoop talk.
Yes, we did. It was so wonderful being here. It really was. It was delightful. You're going to have to bring all my poets in.
Okay.
I'd love to share with you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I thank Mark Schoenfeld for letting me know about you. And for everyone out there, please tune in again. We're live every Monday at 6:00. And catch Extra Innings on Amazon Prime when you have a chance. Have a good night, Leah. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
I struggle all the time with it.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7:00 every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.